This past week, 67 lives were lost in a collision between a commercial jet and military helicopter over Reagan National Airport in Washington, D.C. The painful aftermath brings with it questions, truths, conspiracies, call to do better, more than that even. Joining us now to examine what we know of this tragedy is a veteran pilot, over 3,000 hours of flight time with the U.S. Air Force and Florida Air National Guard, along with 37 years as a pilot with Delta. He's also been an instructor pilot, chief instructor, air show pilot. He's racked up over 20,000 hours in the air. He shares stories from his life and his career in his book, My Life Above the Clouds, Lieutenant Colonel Alan Campbell. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing well, and thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for sharing your vast experience, as I just highlighted a portion of your stellar resume. I want to get into a couple of the obvious things first, and we'll get into a little more deeper into things. Flying into Reagan National, I'm thinking of this too. It's one of the busiest airports, but it also has a lot of restrictions in the air. There's certain obvious buildings and locations that planes of all kind cannot fly over. So are we talking about a large number of planes over a more constricted flying area than what would normally be available?
Yes, that would be a very good statement about that, because you have the White House, you have Congress, you have all the buildings around there that are restricted. And so you basically have to fly up the river, up the Potomac River, put you right on the runway there, landing to the north. And that's what you do 90% of the time. The runway used in this accident, however, is runway 33. To make that one, you have to swing over to the right, still over the river, and then make a left turn and land on runway 33. And that's what happened in this accident. Probably not that unusual. It was at night. The pilots could have said no. They agreed. There was an airplane apparently parked on the runway that was a little bit late for takeoff. And so it was a win-win. It was a good way to solve that little bit of a problem. And everything went perfectly well until right at the end.
And just as a stat, too, that I picked up over the course of this week, a landing and takeoff at Reagan happens on the average about every minute. So with a plane like that being delayed on the runway, that can cause a lot of problems very quickly. Now, going off of the words and the recordings we've heard, at least at this point, by the tower, there was visual contact. When that's the case, what are there protocols? Who's supposed to be the one to give way?
Well, that, I think, is where the confusion is, and that's what this investigation is going to have to determine, because apparently the controller asked the Army Black Hawk, did you see the airplane? And apparently they said yes. However, there could be two or three airplanes in the series. Maybe they saw the second one and did not see the first one. There's no way to resolve that. That's just miscommunication or misunderstanding. And I think that's what caused the accident. They thought they were clear of the airplane that he was talking about, and they were not clear of the airplane that was actually in their close zone.
We also heard, too, that wasn't there an option that the jetliner was given to land at an alternate runway?
And he agreed. That's probably not uncommon. And but that put him in the zone with the Black Hawk helicopter. And if the Black Hawk helicopter had not been there, the airplane would have probably landed perfectly and we wouldn't be having this discussion. The Black Hawk is the discussion here. That's the issue, and that's what needs to be resolved.
People expressing either concerns or curiosities, why was the Black Hawk flying so low? That's fairly common, though, isn't it?
Well, it's not only common, but it's pretty much required in that area, because they need to be low enough to be below the commercial airplanes. I know that sounds kind of ridiculous, but they're down at like 200 feet, so they're below the airplane making its left turn to land on 33. The problem is, for some reason, they'd gained altitude. They were up at like 350 to 400 feet, which put them exactly at the altitude of the American Airlines flight. And when you see the video, I mean, it was T-boned. It was not a near miss. It was not a clip. They actually completely collided. So that Black Hawk was too high. And people don't understand that the American airplane does not have the ability to turn and move quickly. The gear's down, the flaps are down, the speed is low, and they're close to the ground. So their options are incredibly limited. The Black Hawk helicopter, however, can stop. It can hover. It could turn left. It could have gone away from the potential collision. And for some reason, there was no communication to do that. If the Black Hawk had seen them, they could have easily avoided them. So that's going to be part of the discussion here. Apparently, there's night vision goggles involved. That's a whole nother discussion. Why were they wearing them in that situation? They should not have been. The collision probably wouldn't have happened.
Are with Lieutenant Colonel Alan Campbell, a veteran pilot, over 20,000 hours in the air between military service and commercial service. He also shares some stories of his life and career, My Life Above the Clouds, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. As far as training is concerned for pilots, is there a standardized training program to, I mean, obviously something like this was unavoidable because you have two parties in action, but is there are there defensive moves that pilots are trained to do as best as whatever they're flying is capable of doing?
You know, that's an interesting question because I have to say the answer is no. You go to simulators, you do the instrument approaches, the low visibility. They can put turbulence out there. You can have buffets and all this sort of thing, airspeed changes. There's a lot of things you can do, and maybe your decision is, okay, this is bad, let's go around. But to try to put a collision potential in a simulator ride would just be unusual. You're supposed to be looking out. Yes, you're supposed to see things, and you can say things, you can call, you can talk. And, oh, by the way, you also have this thing on your little indicators up front that are radar controlled. All these transponders send all this information out. So your airplane will see the airplanes around you on this instrument. And if they're no hazard, they'll just be bland. If they become a hazard, then they might come in yellow and just give you something to look at. Maybe you look out and see them and say, okay, we've got vertical altitude clearance. We're good. If they get too close, they go red and you get a warning. And your airplane will actually tell you climb. I don't know what the choices are now. That may have changed, but it'll tell you how to avoid the accident, climb, descend, or whatever. But when you're at low altitude with the gear and the flaps, low airspeed, descend is not an option. At that speed and situation, climb is not much of an option. So about your only option is turn, and they were turning towards the runway. So they were pretty much out of options.
Is it fair to say, too, even though the helicopter flight was termed a training exercise, that doesn't mean that the three on the helicopter went from flight simulators to going into a hot and heavy training session? There's a lot a military pilot has to experience before they get to the stage these three were at.
True, and the guy in the left seat had 1,000 hours, and the person in the right seat had 500. And so that's not insignificant. That's not jump change. They were experienced. And then there's a third guy in there that has the visibility. He can be looking around. Well, where was he looking? Were they wearing the night vision goggles? Were they having a discussion? Was there maybe an abnormal going on in their helicopter and they were dealing with it? Maybe they had a warning horn. So all of that will come out in the discussion later on. But I think they're going to realize that that helicopter should not have been there. It shouldn't be that close to a busy commercial airport. They've got to figure out a way to give them a different route so that that's not even an issue because this has just raised a huge red flag.
I want to wrap up with a little time with your book, My Life Above the Clouds, because as I said, with flying for as long as you have, with as much miles and the air hours you've had racked up, I was reading the summary of your book, and you call yourself lucky to be able to do everything that you've done in your life. Is it luck, or is it really you had a passion and you knew it and you went to do everything you could with that passion?
Well, I would say lucky. In high school, I was just a very average guy. I tried all kinds of things. I didn't exceed at anything. But then I went to the Citadel in Charleston, South Carolina. And for some reason, that's where I took off. And I did. You've got to graduate with your class, so you've got to complete in 4 years. I got a civil engineering degree. I was a company commander. I was extremely successful. And it just changed my life, and it changed my attitude, I guess you would say. Well, then I wanted to be a pilot, and I wanted to go in the Air Force. And I had a combat mission going to Vietnam, and Nixon signed the peace treaty. And so they canceled my assignment, and I never went to Vietnam. They made me an instructor pilot in the Air Force, which I loved doing that. I was a good instructor, and I enjoyed doing it. But I decided I need to get out early. This isn't working. So I went to the Florida Air National Guard over in Jacksonville. I got to fly the F-106, which is one of the best fighters on the planet, 50,000 feet, twice the speed of sound. And then I got to fly the F-16, which pulls 9 Gs. It's what the Thunderbirds fly now. It's an awesome airplane. And I got to do all of that for 21 years. You can't make that stuff up. But at the same time, I got a job with Delta, and I got to fly all over the world, literally. And I'm not writing a book to brag about me. I'm an average guy that just did really well. And so the point of the book is give this to your kids and just say, look what an average guy can do. You don't have to be a superstar. You don't have to be from a big shot family. You just got to stick with it. You've got to work hard. Don't get arrested. Don't do drugs. And just go for it is my expression. I love to say that. If you don't want to be a pilot, it might not work for you. You might not have the visibility. You might not be ambidextrous. You might not like it. Well, you might not be a doctor. You got to be a really smart guy. But have a plan B and a plan C, and you'll eventually find something that not only works out, but that you enjoy. And so read the book, look at the ideas, and say, you know, I can do that, and then go for it.
And it also comes about with knowing yourself and being honest with yourself and knowing that if I have the passion, if I have the drive, that I can have a great life and a productive life, too. Those are some of the lessons you'll get from Lieutenant Colonel Campbell's book, My Life Above the Clouds. You find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Just go to our homepage of our website. I have a purchase link there as well. Lieutenant Colonel Alan Campbell, thank you for helping us better understand what is being confronted by so many people right now to try to figure out the cause and how best to do what they can to make sure that something like a situation like this does not happen. Again, it's important to note, too, that air travel, when you look at the number of flights any given moment, the number of accidents that happen, while tragic, is a small portion of total air flights that are happening. So for those who are getting fearful of air flying by something, a story like this, there is a great deal of safety that is in place that unfortunately did not come about for this particular incident. But for you as a flyer, as a passenger, you can fly with safety and confidence in that pilot in the cockpit. And that's certainly what Lieutenant Colonel Alan Campbell has served as for Delta, for the military, for the National Guard. Thank you for sharing your life and your story today, sir.
Thank you for letting me. Appreciate it.